Hello, I'm Shalom.
And I'm Courtney.
We're the Happy Hipsters.
And this is Almost Nerdy. We love sci-fi, we love fantasy, we love all things nerdy.
And we are about to spoil this movie for you, so make sure you've already watched it. Hey guys, welcome to the final episode of Potter Watch.
It's so sad, it's already done.
So it was so quick.
It went very quick. Mm-hmm. So we are doing the Deathly Hallows part 1 and 2 because it's the same story. It doesn't make sense to make two podcasts out of this. So
take that, producers. They've been going against the book this whole time, so we might as well like just a little revenge.
I like that they split it into two movies. I thought it was I thought it was very inventive, and I actually think it paved the way for other people. Twilight, you didn't have to do it, but other people like Marvel with Infinity War and Endgame, like it paved the way for them to be able to tell a story that they needed in the time frame that they needed, instead of trying to shove it all into one.
I hear that kind of.
I'm a fan of it.
Kind of. I don't like it. I'm
like, make it one. I don't think they would have been able to do this in one movie.
I don't know. Like, I mean, they're pretty good at smooshing things, so why not?
I don't know. Anyway, just a reminder, we are still raising money for the Children's Fund at CHOP. That is the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. I just wanted to start off with a little quote from Dumbledore. I think most of you will know this. Happiness can be found even in the darkest times when only one remembers to turn on the light. So I just wanted to throw that out there because things are hectic right now. We literally have a pandemic. It's crazy. Like, I feel like I wake up every day and it's like, it just feels dark. Like, I feel like I'm in the Harry Potter series. Like,
it's becoming more and more nightmarish.
Yeah. You know? Like, it's getting like, scarier. It's and like it's crazy. Like, yeah. It's so I was just thinking about like being a light and like what we can do to be a light, and something like this, it might seem silly to like donate only a dollar, $5, like whatever amount, but it really does make a difference, especially in our healthcare system right now. The Children's Hospital of Philadelphia obviously is for children. So these are kids who are immunocompromised at the moment. And times like this are really scary for them, for their parents. Like, you know, they can't be around coronavirus or any, like, in situations where, like, that could even be close because they could unintentionally harm their child. So I think it's really important now, more than ever, that this causes, I think, is very timely.
Very timely. Very, very timely. Like, it's something that, like, the small thing you do can make a massive difference, you know? So whatever you can do, just do it. Like, I feel like we're living in a time where, you know, people are being asked to bring like their extra masks that they have at home, you know, because that can be the big difference between protecting, you know, a nurse or a child, or, you know, like it makes a big difference. So please, like, don't feel discouraged if you can't like give $1 billion.
Yeah.
You know, just do whatever you can, you know, with us or with anyone else. But
let's
just have that spirit of giving.
Yeah. And being the light.
And being the light, turning on the light.
Turning on the light. So you can donate via our Instagram page, the_happy_hipsters on Instagram.
Yeah.
You can go there. There's a link in our bio that takes us to the donation page.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. So let us dive into the character catch-up.
Here we go. The Ministry has fallen and Voldemort is in the open. Harry, Ron, and Hermione are on a quest to hunt down the Horcruxes to defeat Voldemort for good. This takes them undercover at the Ministry of Magic, they break into Gringotts Bank, and finally to Hogwarts. They discover how difficult it is to defeat Horcruxes and only get a little distracted by the lure of the Deathly Hallows. In the end, there's a battle at Hogwarts. Snape's death leads Harry to learning that Dumbledore had every reason to trust him. And plot twist, Harry is a Horcrux himself. After ridding himself of Voldemort's soul, Harry is able to defeat Voldemort. And 19 years later, all is well.
All is well. When you were like, the Ministry has fallen out, I felt like just running and screaming.
Running.
Like,
Oh my gosh. It's like, I just, again, like to go back to like, to go back to like the opening, it's like,
yeah,
I feel like right now with like coronavirus, which still sounds like a silly name for a virus. I know that like lots of them have been named Corona before.
COVID-19.
COVID. It kind of feels that way right now. It's like, you know, you have people hoarding supplies, you have all this stuff, and like it kind of makes this situation more real. Like, you know, I think about the part when the Weasleys can't go to work anymore, and it's like there's people who are trying to go to work now, and then like they're just, they're being told they have to stay home now. You know, it's just like just thinking about those fears and the fears of your family, and like I think about the fifth book with Molly Weasley when she has the boggart come out and it's just like everyone's dead. It's like, you know, these are real life things in a real life situation, and it's scary.
Yeah, I hear that. Like it's hard. Like in this book, it's almost like everything changes, everything falls apart. And, and seeing, you know, just that last battle scene, like to be honest with you, like the book gives me more like more nerves. Like just I was very, you know, anxious towards the end of the book, like when everybody comes, you know, the way they do, they execute, like, sorry, the way she executes in the book is incredible. And the movie's good. This movie's good too. We'll dive into that. But yeah, like, you know, this whole experience, like of the movies or the books is really like, you know, it's kind of like a nice, you know, mirror to what we're experiencing right now, to be like, okay, this is really dark right now. But eventually, I don't know how. I don't know how it's going to happen, but we'll come out of it.
So. Come out. We need a Harry Potter.
We need some Harry Potter.
Yeah. So, let's rate it. Are you ready? Rats. Rating and testing system.
Yay.
So, this movies, both of them, we're rating them together as one unit. So, they can get up to five stars. Star for scripting, one for acting, one for cinematography, one for essence of the book, and lastly, the X Factor.
The X Factor.
That's our favorite category. Because it's a free-for-all category. So, Shalom, what would you give these movies for scripting?
I'll give it 3/4, you know, because I still... For me, I love, they wrote well. Like, I'd say, like, they wrote well. There wasn't too much, so many templates for this movie. Or rather, for this kind of genre, you know, that they could follow. And I think that they really adapted to the more epic sense of, you know, of this world. Like, there's an epicness about their writing. There's a journey factor where they're going around and they're like, hunting Horcruxes. Ron goes off, you know, like, you know, goes nuts and comes back, and then there's the build up to those moments where they're back at Hogwarts. People clap hands for Harry. It's all building up. The Weasleys are all back, at Hogwarts. All these people show up. You know, Professor McGonagall gets to do the spell with the giants and she gets excited. It's kind of an exciting moment. And so I think they did well. I took 1/4 off because the book is just better. You know, honestly, like the book is better. That's not
really part of this category though.
No, I know that. Okay. I know that. I think for me, it's all about how good could something be. It's not just about, you know, were you good compared to every other crappy thing that's out there? Or so for me, it's like, okay, could you have done better with this? You know, are there factors or things that you missed here that you could have like kept and made this even more impactful than, you know, it was? And don't get me wrong, it was still impactful. We'll touch that. I'll actually touch on that, like with X Factor, like how J.K. Rowling has a big, you know, influence on all of this, but yeah, like 3/4 based on just purely on them putting it together. It's an epic tale. There's journey, there's story. But I remember 1/4 because it just doesn't match up to the books. They're like, I mean, I'm sorry, but there is another template that they're being matched up to, you know? And the book storyline, mm-hmm. scripting, everything is better. And yeah. Jim Dale is just amazing.
Jim Dale. Shalom loves Jim Dale. I give the script 1 star. I actually thought that they wrote a very cohesive script. Mm. They made a lot of changes to the book. Mm. But I didn't necessarily mind them because they kind of had to make up for things that they did in the past. So, like, since in the 6th movie, we don't get to see a lot of the memories, and it wouldn't really make sense that Harry just knows all this stuff about Voldemort. Instead, he can hear the Horcruxes, which I actually thought was a nice way to do it because visually speaking, like, as a movie, it was nice to kind of have that together instead of having Harry need to, like, literally say things. And it gave you more of that sense that Harry is a Horcrux. So I really didn't mind that change. And there were a few other changes, like, in the Battle of Hogwarts, where we actually get to, like, see Ron and Hermione go down to the Chamber of Secrets. We get to, like, we get to see all this stuff. I think those things were adapted really well, but I also, like, we'll get that. I think we should just go to essence. But overall, I think scripting, they wrote a very cohesive story. I don't look at this story and go, none of this makes sense. That was weird. That was weird. That feels rushed. Like, it felt like good pacing. Yeah. I thought that the moments were really good. Like, they tried to stay as true as they could to the book. And I thought that that was
So you mean like the technical execution was good?
Yes, I thought it was good.
Okay. I actually agree 100% with you there. It's just that that nagging feeling of, like, you could have done better. That I think that's what kills me.
I think we should just do essence. What do you think?
Like, I'll say half.
Okay.
Why? And a lot of it has to do with the book is just really explain stuff, you know, like, wait, like, why is Harry so obsessed with Dumbledore? Why is that important? What's this whole story with the Deathly Hallows? Like, what's really going on there? And I feel like there's so many other details that they don't really touch on. Neville is so much more BA in the book than in the movie. Understanding the relationship between the Malfoys and Voldemort, I feel like the book gives a little bit more flesh to it. I mean, the movies try. I think the movies try.
Yeah.
But I feel like the book just, like, really, like, fleshes out, shows the complexity, the fear that the Malfoys have in this situation. And also, you know, Snape. You know, Snape is a big piece. I feel like the book makes sure that, you know, it really touches on Snape. It really explains what really happened with Snape. Why is Snape the way that he is?
And I think why are you the way that you are,
Toby?
Toby from The Office. For all those Office fans out there.
and I think that's the thing. It's like those are such important details. Or even, you know, Dumbledore.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much of who Dumbledore is that, like, you find in the book that explains his journey and why Dumbledore was the way that he was. And I think that the book really brings it out. I feel like they don't touch enough on... I feel like Harry's softer in the movies.
Yeah.
He's way too soft, to be, you know, honesty. He's less realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Harry's very realistic in the movie. He's annoying. He's a prick.
In the book.
In the book. He's a prick, but... I prefer that because it really, like, shows for me, like, for me, it shows, like, his struggle, it shows the darkness that he's facing right now with Voldemort and him being Horcrux and so forth. I think that it really shows the weight that he's carrying better in the book. And I feel like the movie kind of brushes over and went more for the epic than the story.
I also gave it 0.5 star. Mostly because I feel like it didn't... I feel like the movie, although it hit on a lot of the right points, I feel like it didn't catch some of the big themes that are here. And one of the biggest themes that I think that this book goes through is the idea of remorse leading to redemption. That was just such a huge, huge thing because the whole time in the book, Harry's like... Like, I wasn't like that. Like, we're their age and, like, we're not making bad decisions, you know, all that. But he's leaving out the idea that you can learn from something. So, like, when you look at Snape, this is really specifically in reference to Snape and Dumbledore. So he's finding out all this stuff about Dumbledore in the past. And it's like, at the end of the day, he doesn't get that, like, Dumbledore felt true remorse, and that's what made him change his ways. Same with Snape. Snape, you know, goes down this dark path, makes all the wrong choices, right? But then at the end of the day, he feels true remorse for what he does, and that's why he spends his life taking care of Harry. Although I think he's also done some emotional damage to Harry at the same time. Like, he's, you know, some grudges can't be put aside, but I also think that at the end of the day, like, remorse is what leads to redemption. And so much so, Harry learns this story, like, learns that so deeply that when he faces Voldemort in the end, he literally says to him, like, come on, Tom, try for some remorse. Like, try for a little remorse. So it's like, he actually even felt that Voldemort could have redemption. That's like how hard this hits Harry, like, this theme of remorse and redemption. Like, you can make bad choices, but you can be, you're still redeemable. And I think that that's like something that's very, very big. I think another thing that really got left out of this was, and I will always talk about this, house elves. house elves.
Fight.
Creature.
Fight for more than regulars.
You know, like, that really is a big deal. Like, we really miss out on that whole creature aspect. Even Harry is even able to forgive Creature, who was the reason why Sirius was killed. But I mean, I guess it makes sense that it wouldn't be in the movie because they leave Creature out of that whole scenario in the movie. So, overall, I would say, like, my big thing is, like, the theme of this book is remorse and redemption, and that theme is completely lost here.
Like, you know, they went for, you know, more of, you know, there is story, like, you know, but it's not really capturing the heartbeat of the book, like what J.K. Rowling is really driving towards.
Okay, so what would you give acting?
Oh yeah, acting will always be one. You can just always assume that I'm gonna say one, because the acting is phenomenal. They do a great job. You know, shout out to Mrs. Weasley for using bad words and killing a very bad person.
Yeah, kill Bellatrix. Take her down.
Yeah.
I give it one as well. I thought they did a really good job with this. The whole performance. I really liked it. This movie makes me cry every time. So, cinematography, what would you give it?
Cinematography, I would give it also a one.
Yeah, full star for me as well.
Yeah, like, to be honest, I found the fires impressive. I thought that was really cool. Like, in the Room of Requirement, I thought that was really cool.
That CGI. Exactly. Yeah. Literally exactly the way the book described it.
Yeah, exactly.
I was so impressed by that.
It was really impressive, really well done. You can tell that they really were like, this is the final thing, let's go for it. And they did, and that was awesome.
Yeah, I have to say, if you've listened to Chamber of Secrets, you know that is, like, one of my favorite books and movie. I am obsessed, like, obsessed with the set design of the Chamber of Secrets. So I was so happy with their choice to actually go to the Chamber of Secrets again. And we get to, like, watch that happen. As well as, I really like the way that they showed, like, Voldemort's souls being destroyed.
Yeah.
So it's like, we got the, when they do the cup, like, his face is, like, in the water. And then when they do the diadem, the face is in the fire. I thought they did a really good job with all of that. I have to say, though, this also goes with my essence issue. They don't really explain that, like, Voldemort can't feel his soul. And, like, I thought that was something that was also kind of important to the character of Voldemort himself, is that he mutilated him to the point where, like, he couldn't feel things like that anymore.
Right.
So that's part of the essence as well. So lastly, X Factor.
Yeah, one as well. Like, and I bring it back. I always bring it back to, the book is so fantastic. The ideas in the book are so fantastic, so great, that they could have used cardboards or for CGI, I don't know. Like, they would have done something crazy, and I still would have thought it's impressive. Okay, now maybe not cardboards, but yeah, like, you know, they could have done something that's not as great, and still, like, it would have had a pretty big impact, because the story that J.K. Rowling, or the world that J.K. Rowling creates, is that great.
Yeah.
You know, and the concepts and the ideas around it are just that great. So that's just something that, like, I will always find impressive.
Yeah, I also gave one star for X Factor because It's Harry Potter. I get to the end and I'm like, well, I guess we're starting at the beginning again.
Right.
here we go. Sorcerer's Stone, get ready. I just think it's one of those. You're right. Like, it's just so magical and everything about it. And they really just brought it to life, you know?
They did.
I think I'll always be obsessed with
Absolutely.
It. Absolutely. Shalom gave it a 4.25. I gave it 4.5. So this movie gets a 4.3.
4.3. Not bad.
Not bad. Not bad. Not bad at all.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, so we kind of touched a little bit on this, but what are some things that you really felt like these two movies brought to life, and what did you feel like you missed out on?
Huh. Yeah, like, I think, to be honest with you, I think the movie brought some of the darkness that... you know, the communities are sensing, like, just the change. I felt like the wedding scene is crazy good.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy good.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they over-dramatize it, but you can see, like, I feel like there's something about, you know, like, right now, you know, you drive into town. We live by a small little town, and it's always buzzing crazy. I would have never guessed in a million years that I would drive into Doylestown, and there'll be no one. Right?
Yeah.
And there's a shift, a mind shift that happens when things go like that. There's a darkness that you begin to, like, just feel and sense when things change for the worse in, like, in that way. And that's something that you see in these movies. You see this shift. And J.K. Rowling really set up what? Be like, what a better place to introduce the attack of the enemy, the initial assault from the enemy than a wedding. You know, a wedding, you're at a wedding, you're celebrating where it's supposed to be safe. I mean, they've been running away. Like, I mean, they tried to kill Harry when he was going to the Weasleys. But this moment seems to be like the defining thing that Harry, Hermione, and Ron get separated from everyone else. Mm. And they officially go on this journey that Dumbledore sent them on. And so that's something that, like, for me, I feel like they really did a great job showing that darkness. I feel like they did a great job with, you know, the Battle of Hogwarts. I wish there was more. I also add a wish there, like, where it's like, I wish that they'd really brought that, like, you know, where the centaurs and, like, that would have been epic, right? Like, to have the centaurs
fighting
as well, the giants fighting as well. They might have had maybe CGI, you know, limitations, but for me it was like, oh my gosh, like, this is a fight, it's a fight, it's happening. And, you know, and Neville was like, yeah, Dumbledore's on it, you know, pulling out the sword and ready to fight. Okay, I don't think he says Dumbledore's on it. Does he say that?
I don't remember what he says, but I know
I'm mixing the book. He says something
inspirational. He does charge.
He says something inspirational. Yeah, he says something really inspirational. Pulls out the knife. This is the knife.
The
sword. And, you know, and in the book, that's where he slays Nagini, which I thought that was... BA. I wish they'd done that. I wish that, you know, it was Neville versus the snake. Neville kills the snake. You know, Neville deserves more than just like, ooh, the snake is distracted trying to kill someone, and Neville sneaks up on it and cuts its head. You know, like, he deserves something that was more epic than what they gave him in the movie. And I wish they had done that. I wish that the final scene was more public. And I kind of like, you know, okay, for me, like, with I would talk about anime, and, like, you know, I just watched, I'm watching Kenshi, it's Samurai X, and, like, they're fighting, and, you know, they're swinging their sword. In the middle of the swing, they all pause, and they literally have a whole conversation, like, with him, his sword is swinging in, and he talks about his fighting style, and how he grew up, you know, and how he learned his fighting style. And so I find that annoying quite a bit, but in this situation, I wish that they had gone that way with how J.K. Rowling did it, with them, like, kind of going around each other in circles, and it's like,
this is specifically, you know, in the book specifically, Voldemort and Harry have a whole conversation
in circles, like, and they're like circling each other almost, like, it's like, you know, you don't know anything. No, you don't know anything. And it's kind of like that sort of situation. I wish they had done a little bit of that, where the fight is more public, the people are watching. I thought that in the movie it felt more epic. Like seeing Voldemort die, everyone's watching it. Mrs. Weasley kills Bellatrix.
Yeah.
And you know, and everyone is watching this. It's such a justice moment, public justice moment. And I feel like in the movie they kind of took them out to the outskirts.
Yeah.
Where they have the little jewel. And it just didn't have that, you know, that strong vibe. Still good. Still good.
Mm-hmm.
But those are definitely things I wish were there.
Yeah. I have a pretty long list, I feel like, of things that I felt like they really brought to life.
Yeah.
Starting with the plan to get Harry from the Dursleys to the Weasleys. So good.
Yes.
I thought they did a good job with that. And I, you know, I do kind of miss, like, the bigger plan, how, like, they had to go to one safe house before they get to another safe house, like, just the intricacy of that. But I think for the sake of time, they did a pretty good job.
Yes.
I really loved, like, the seeing the different Harrys played by different characters, and, like, you could clearly tell, like, who was who.
Yeah.
Like, like, Hermione is, like, already changed and ready while all the other Harrys are, like, still changing. Like, that's clearly Hermione. So I liked that, like, we got that whole perception. Thought that was great. One of the things that I thought they did so, so beautifully was the Tale of Three Brothers. That is something that could have been boring. That's something that could have been hokey. And they used this, like, beautiful, almost like, it was almost like a paper art. Like,
animation,
it felt like between, like, paper and a like a puppet shadow show type of thing. Like, it was just gorgeous to look at, and like obviously it's been inspirational because they have it. They have that whole thing at Universal with with those puppets, and it's like probably one of our favorite things that we saw at Universal when we went to Harry Potter World there.
Absolutely.
Like, absolutely gorgeous. I just think they did a great job. That was great. I really enjoyed the Battle of Hogwarts. I thought that they did a really good job. I said it earlier, like how, instead of them just like describing moments and stuff like that, we actually saw the moments happen instead. I really liked that.
Yeah.
I really, really liked that. As far as things that I really missed, I think I missed mostly on a lot of like the character development stuff.
Yeah.
I really missed like Creature being happy.
Mm.
I just think that that was, again, transformation, like stuff like that, I really love. So I really miss that we got to see Creature actually being happy, and like what he would be like if Sirius had treated him well, like what, like what Creature could really be like.
Yeah.
I really missed out on Percy's redemption. I think his redemption is a big deal because he literally says, like, you know, I was power hungry and I was wrong, and like I'm back and I want to fight with you guys and I want to be on the right side of history. And I just, that's something that I really miss. And then I absolutely, absolutely, absolutely love the conversation around like goblin ownership versus wizard ownership.
Yes.
Because I think that's something that we deal with in everyday life, and we might not really see it per se, but I really like that idea that like goblins have this view of ownership, and like wizards have this view, and like that has led, that's what has led to all these disagreements. And some of that has led to this like attitude of not really valuing goblins, like kind of in quotes working aside them, but like not really, you don't really have real relationships with them. So I think that that's was a very interesting concept.
Yeah.
And it kind of reminded me a lot of like when the U.S. was originally colonized, right? Like, a lot of Native Americans were, they would travel, you know? They were kind of nomadic. I forget what it's called. Not nomadic. Is it nomadic? That might be the word. So, like, their view of territory was, like, you move with your territory. And once you're on the territory and you occupy it, then that's your territory. Whereas, like, the white man, he viewed it as, like, I don't have to be living on it. It's still my territory as long as I've claimed it my territory. So, like, there was this huge conflict over a misconception, or I don't even know misconception. What's the word I'm looking for? Like, the miscommunication about how to view territory. Whereas, like, Native Americans would be like, well, you're not living on it. How can this be yours? Like, if we can live on it, then it's ours.
Yeah.
So I was kind of thinking about that. And then lastly, just Dumbledore's life. Yeah. Like,
yeah,
I actually really like the life and lies of Dumbledore, and that's something that Aberforth really leans into later on, where he's like, you know, my mom and my brother love their lies and their secrecy. Mm. Like, but it led to my sister's death.
Yeah.
And you know, going to Fantastic Beasts now, we get to see Obscurials and what they're like and how their life functions. And it's like, that's what Ariana was. Like, she was an Obscurial based on a tragic event that happened to her when she was younger.
Yeah.
But it also kind of reminds me of, like, you think about way back when, you know, anyone who had any type of, like, if you're a bipolar, anything like that, like, you get put in, like, these psych wards where they, like, electrocuted you, you know? Like, I kind of think about that. I'm like, I wonder what medicine was like way back when. Because when they're in St. Mungo's, there's one part when Ron is walking past and, like, they're trying to tell him that he has, like, a terrible affliction, but really he's just talking about his freckles. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you would think, like, medicine both in wizards and humans has kind of, like, evolved at the same, like, rate a little bit. So it's like, who knows what would have happened to Ariana, like, because Dumbledore is supposed to be ridiculously old.
Yeah.
So it's like, when they're kids, who knows
what those times were like.
Yeah, what those times were like. Yeah. And then, you know, that also leads to the conversation where it's like, you know, the whole time Harry's sitting there and he's like, how could Dumbledore have been like this? Like, the greater good. Yeah. Like, that's just for, like, slaying muggles and all that. But then Harry actually ends up saying that in his conversation with Aberforth. He ends up saying, like, sometimes you have to do things for the greater good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sometimes you have to look past yourself for the greater good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Grindelwald took it one way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Dumbledore was thinking about it a different way.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know.
Those are good things. I think that, like, I definitely miss out on Dumbledore's life. I think that was important to experience that, like, to be like, why is Dumbledore the way that he is? Why is he planning things the way that he plans things?
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's just something that they didn't put in there. It's okay, you know, it's you know, but yeah, I wish it was there.
Yeah. Oh, and one last thing that I remembered that I liked from the books and was more clear in the books, but they changed it in the movie, and I don't love that they changed it in the movie, is that the reason why Harry doesn't die when Voldemort tries to kill him, when Harry sacrifices himself, is because Dumbledore explains it, where he says that Voldemort in the fourth one, when Voldemort came back and he put Harry's blood in him, like, so part of that protection, like, he tied their destinies closer together, of the, like, you know, one can't live while the other survives. Wow. Like, they tied them closer, so it's, again, just pursuing that point of Voldemort. If Voldemort doesn't understand the magic, he doesn't care about it. If he thinks it's lesser than him, he doesn't care about it. He didn't truly understand the power of Lily's sacrifice, and so he didn't know how dangerous it would be to put Harry's blood in him when he was creating his new body. Whereas the movie kind of leads you to believe that the Deathly Hallows are the reason why Harry stays alive, but that's not, like, the Deathly Hallows are actually just very powerful magical objects. They don't actually make you the Master of Death. Yeah. They're just very powerful magical objects. That's it.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. I like that.
Okay. Before we move on to our hot take, I just had, like, a few other things I wanted to talk about. Okay. I think I want to talk about Ron a little bit with the locket and just, like, his deepest fear.
Yeah.
I have to say, like, it was actually more disturbing seeing it in the movie than just, like, reading about it. It's so weird.
The reading is a little more disturbing to me. Like,
really?
It's kind of like rather its impact on Ron. You know, in the movie, they kind of keep him, like, kind of a little more stone faced than anything else. Like, he's kind of, like, just bugged about it. But I think that nothing new here. It's like Ron has insecurities.
Yeah.
And he's always had insecurities about Harry, about anything, about Hermione. And it almost seems like, you know, here Voldemort's, you know, Horcrux tries to expose that and kind of use that to get Ron to kill Harry, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that was that was kind of like a very big moment for Ron, like a maybe a growth moment, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like to ignore the Horcrux and yeah. still kill it, whilst it's saying some of his deepest fears and insecurities. And I thought that was kind of like a cool moment for Ron to grow. And I thought yeah. I like where it was placed mm-hmm. after he had run off and done something really stupid, mm-hmm. Coming back and really being really determined to grow, and mm-hmm. you see that growth there
again. Remorse and redemption,
yeah,
feels true remorse for leaving and comes yeah. back, and he is redeemed by it.
Yeah,
I think Ron really grows a lot in this book. This is the same one where he gets the they don't talk about it in the movie, but in the book they talk about how Fred mm-hmm. and George gave him a book, a dating book.
Yeah.
So I feel like Ron is really learning like to be more than just himself, to mm-hmm. like live past just his own emotions and everything. And I think that mm-hmm. the locket was a big moment for him because mm-hmm. he really got to kind of stand up to his fear mm. of being forgotten, his fear of being unloved, his mm. fear of like people wanting everyone else, him not really being in the limelight, mm. you know.
Mm.
And mm. I think also just the fear of like being really affected by something more than other people.
Yeah.
Because he's way more affected by the locket than mm. either one of them.
Yeah.
He's yeah. like way more affected by yeah. it. So I really like that. And I do feel bad for him though. It's like when you like someone and then you feel yeah. like that person would rather be with someone else for all these reasons. It's like, and that's not mm. even true. Like, mm. Hermione obviously wants to be with him. She marries yeah. him.
Mm.
So.
Mm. Mm.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also wanted to talk a little bit about Voldemort's search for the Elder Wand.
Mm.
I think this is one of the things that drives me the most insane, but mm. maybe comes back to that idea of if Voldemort doesn't really get it, he doesn't care about it. So Voldemort questions Grindelwald, right?
Yeah.
Who is clearly not dead because he questioned him.
Uh-huh.
And then takes the wand from Dumbledore, and he knows that the wand was Dumbledore's wand, but mm. yet he feels like he needs to kill Snape.
Mm. Right.
Like, what?
He thought because Snape killed Dumbledore, the wand is now loyal to...
No, I get that, but like... Him.
But it's kind of like, it's like, don't you know, it's just, it means, they said disarm.
Yeah.
Like, disarm. Like, so you could have just, like attacked Snape with, like, a lighter thing and disarmed him and then be like, oh, cool, sorry.
Literally Expelliarmus.
Right. Expelliarmus could have literally been like, I'm taking the wand. Or have Snape hold the wand and attack him and
yeah.
remove the wand. But he just had to kill him. He just was like, it's like, you need, I guess he didn't want to take any chances, but... Also, Voldemort loves just to kill. Like, that's his vibe. It's his thing. Like, he's like, I just like to, like, murder people, you know? And that was kind of like, there's just, you know, there's a stupidity to the villain Voldemort. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like she played a very dangerous, like, game, but it paid off. Like, mm. where it's a line between, like, wow, this villain is really dumb. And, wow, I can't, like... Wow, like we miss that as well. Like it's like we kind of miss those little
yeah
things. To be honest, like the first time I was like, oh, so the wand is like I didn't have in my mind. I wasn't going like, yeah. So the wand belongs to the Elder Wand.
Yeah, now it belongs to this person.
So with everything that's happening with them chasing the Elder Wand, like I didn't put two and two together until the very end.
And so, sometimes I think you take things for fact that people just say. It's like, so mm-hmm. according to the Tale of Three Brothers, the Elder Wand is like passes because of a bloody trail, right?
Right.
So it's like it's been killing. People have been killing to get it.
Mm.
But it's like mm. you don't actually need to kill to get it.
You don't.
You just have to win.
Yes.
And then you win its allegiance.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, that's good. That's really good.
Yeah, so, like, what about the other Hallows? Oh, first of all,
mm.
if you got to have, like, one Deathly Hallow, what would you want?
One Deathly Hallow?
Yeah, you get one. Which would you pick?
Yeah, definitely the cloak.
Yeah, me too.
The cloak. Like, it's like...
You're supposed to say the cloak.
I mean, so here's my thing. It's like, you can get the wand. I mean, the wand is cool. Like, you can... Instead of using the wand to murder people, use the cloak to make, like... Use the wand to make invisibility cloaks, to make all kinds of cool
use
stuff.
The wand to make the strongest stuff you can.
Right, exactly. So it's kind of like, guys, this wand is not just for killing. I think sometimes it's like this. There's almost this one dimensional way of thinking about like weapons. Like I was, you know, while we're watching Marvel again, like and think about like Tony Stark, some things he does. You're like, you know, it could be easy to be like, wow, the weapons they're making, Tony, are so dangerous. Stop doing that. But like, it's like, yeah, but they're saving lives.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, like the wand can seem like this thing that you just need to throw away. But maybe the wand is for you to keep and make things that actually like help people.
Mm. So do you disagree then with Harry like getting rid of the wand?
I do.
You think you should have kept it?
I do. First of all, you're creating a scavenger hunt for the next, you know, villain who comes along, who's like, I want that wand. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, I don't know if that's a smart idea. Like, why not keep it, you know, and use it for good. Use it for good. Find a way to hide it, you know, that's like more like, that's easy to hide, but like also a way that you can access it and use it. Mm. So maybe I'm switching to the cloak, to the wand, then the cloak.
I might so change his mind.
I'm changing.
I'm to a wand person now.
Yeah, I'm a wand.
See,
person.
See, it's funny because originally when I asked the question in my head, I was like, Shalom's gonna pick the wand.
Right.
And then you didn't, so I was surprised.
So you can make stuff. Like you can make like. Make cloaks.
Shalom knows what he's doing with it. Shalom's like, I could make this, I could make that.
I have
that.
A plan. I have a 3-step plan, you know, for the wand.
For the wand.
Okay. Pay off student debt, number one.
You're wild.
Number two.
Okay. I think I agree with Harry's choice to let it die. Mm-hmm. It kind of annoys me in the movie that he just breaks it and they don't show him, like, make his wand, like fix his normal wand,
right?
I'm like, show that, like that's right. Important because now he has no wand, so right. It's like it doesn't make any sense that he would just break it and throw it. But I do like the way in the book where like he is talking to Dumbledore's portrait, and right. he's like, okay, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna fix this wand, and then I'm gonna put it back in your grave because that's where it belongs.
You,
yeah. So, we'll put that back.
Evil David.
You, David.
Shit's Creek.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's funny. Like, initially going into the Deathly Hallows conversation, you're kind of like, I don't know. I was kind of on the Hermione side of things. I was like, I don't know, Harry.
Yeah, I would have kept it probably. and used it for good things. Yeah.
So, what do you think about Aberforth's attitude towards Albus?
Understandable,
mm-hmm.
but unfair.
Mm.
You know, it's sometimes when you have one perspective and you're thinking of things in like from one side of things. Where it's like your perspective and how you see things, I think sometimes it's easy to miss some of the most like kind of obvious things. Mm-hmm. Where it's like Dumbledore didn't like
Albus,
you know,
not Aberforth, right?
Yes, yes.
now we have multiple.
Albus didn't just like be. He wasn't just reckless. He's someone who was super gifted, but who gave up so much in order to help. You know, and I think I would think, you know, that. You know, Aberforth would be more understanding. But he doesn't seem like he was. He is. And even hearing his own version of how he confronted, you know, Albus and Grindelwald, like, it's like, it just shows it. Just shows that he was less understanding than anything. And I think that might have escalated the situation. And he also doesn't take responsibility for that. Mm-hmm. Does not take responsibility. Like his whole version is like, screw Albus, you know, it's bad. But then, like, you've got, like, Albus who's like, I don't know what happened. It was a crazy situation. But I feel like Aberforth, for me, in my mind, it makes Aberforth, like, suspect in that situation. I'm like, I think Aberforth is the one who fired the thing that killed Ariana.
Oh, really? You know? Yeah. I just always assumed it was Grindelwald.
Totally. I don't think it was Grindelwald. I highly doubt it was Grindelwald. I think they were just fighting, and I think that, you know, Abufo made a mistake because his you whole think posture, we'll see that his scene? Posture is there's no remorse. They're like, he's got no remorse about it. Like, it's almost like, I'm like, aren't you sad about you fighting? Like, it's, and he does admit that he went in hot, but like, he doesn't really like show, like,
wait, who's this?
Aberforth. So Aberforth doesn't really show that he's remorseful about Ariana's death. He's angry about Ariana's death. He's upset with Dumbledore about how they got to the situation of having to fight, but he never really sticks to the actual fight itself. You know, he's very much like, you know, until that guy came and I confronted him and we fought and then she died, you know, and he kind of brushes over it. But Albus, he sticks in the moment. He's like, I think about this all the time. Like, who did it? Who fired that shot? And in my mind, for me, I think that makes him innocent of it. That makes him, like, for me, in my mind, I'm like 80% sure that it wasn't Albus. I'm pretty sure that it wasn't Grindelwald. I'm pretty sure that it was Aberforth.
It makes you think it's Aberforth.
Just by he's like brushing over it the way that he does. For me, it just looks like someone who does not want to take responsibility for what happened. He's more, he's very angry. He's an angry person who, like, even if he makes a mistake, does not seem like the kind of person who would confess to it and say, hey, you know what, that situation was bad. I might have been right that Dumbledore shouldn't have even tried to leave and go anywhere else, but the way I handled it was so bad. I still feel bad about it. I'm still heartbroken about it. He does not give me like heartbroken vibes. He gives me more angry vibes.
Yeah. Well, anger could be a, you know, symptom of heartbrokenness, though.
Depends on what it is, I guess. Like, it was his. He just seems like to go in on Albus. He's just like, Albus, Albus. And even his tone, she was my favorite. To be honest with you, he does not seem remorseful as to what happened. I'm like, if you really love your sister, why aren't you spending more time talking about her? Like, why aren't you, like, grieving your sister? Why don't you grieve her? Like, I think he blames
Grindelwald, though. I just think, like, personally, when I look at that situation, I think, because I think it all took place over, like, 2 months or something like that. Mm. And I think at this point it is confirmed that, like, Dumbledore and Grindelwald were, like, a thing. Like, a couple. Right. So I just, like, I don't know. Yeah. I think about, like, when you meet, like, when you meet someone and, like, they just get you on, like, every level. Like, I think that you just go a little crazy. And I think Dumbledore was just really in love. Like, he was really in love. And I think he was in a situation where, you know, I think from what we see of the movies, right, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and then the especially the second one, Crimes of Grindelwald, I think that you really see in there that Grindelwald is good at twisting things so that whatever your end game is, like, whatever your end game is, whatever it is, he will use that to make you do what he wants. So he doesn't have this – I don't think he has the same end game as Albus Dumbledore. I think Albus Dumbledore was like, my family was torn apart because Muggles saw my sister performing magic. They attacked her to the point that she's now, like, mentally messed up now. Yeah. She's an Obscurus now. And then – that my dad went to jail and he died there, and then my sister killed my mom, and now I'm stuck here and I have to take care of this broken family, and it's all the Muggles' fault, right? And I don't think I can't imagine Dumbledore being like, we're gonna, like, magic is might, we're gonna, like, we're gonna, like, subject these Muggles to whatever, but, like, I think that you get caught up in the message a little bit, and you know,
and even the tone of the letters, it seems very, like, calming, like, very much like, well, we want to make, let's get on the same page. They're greater good.
It's for everybody's good, like, the greater good. So I think I think very much in love, like, you're always crazy when you, like, fall in love. Like, people get wild and they make very interesting decisions. So I think he probably was not acting like himself, to be honest. Like, between grief, between, like, feeling stuck at home, between, like, all of that, like, I think he probably wasn't acting like himself, and he probably really wasn't taking care of Ariana. I think Aberforth is probably justified in a lot of what he says, but I think he's also not taking into account, like, like, think about what your brother was feeling, you know?
Yeah. My hot take is that the house system should go away, right?
Oh.
And it's a ridiculous system that causes friction because they've just not handled it well. You know, when the four founders, you know, came together, they said, okay, they had different views of, like, who they wanted at the school, right? And then this caused them to split the houses. But then you realize a lot of bad has come out of it to be like, Slytherin is not just the only one to blame. You know, Gryffindor is also to blame. Mm-hmm. This whole infighting between them pushes Gryffindor to be more aggressive and kind of bullish, and Slytherin to be more ambitious and scheming. Mm. You know, so you see that the results of that between what happens with Snape, Voldemort, James, and Harry. Mm. And I think that they need to actually end it so that the schools, the houses come together as one.
That is a really good hot take. I have to say, in the book, they do, again, this is another thing in the book, they do in the book and not the movie, but Voldemort actually puts the sorting hat on Neville's head and he sets it on fire. Mm. And he says, like, that's it. Like, we're done with sorting. We're not going to do that anymore. And this is one of those moments where I was like, I actually kind of agree with Voldemort, but not for the reason that he's, but not for the reason that he's doing it. I really think the house system is very cute. I think that it was well intentioned. Mm-hmm. I think that it. I like that. Mm. But what I think is it doesn't leave enough room for balance.
Right.
I also think that it makes children put a certain amount of value on things that, like, it really shouldn't be making you put value on. Like, it's. Mm. So I could imagine, like, I would probably get sorted into Ravenclaw.
Mm-hmm.
And then instead of just letting me be, like, my normal nerdy self, I would put extra pressure on myself to be, like, the top of the class, to be this, to be that, because I would be like, well, I'm a Ravenclaw. I need to be the smartest. I need to be the most creative. Right. I need to have the most wisdom. I need to, like, I need to be these things, right? I need to
behave a certain way. Yes.
So I almost feel like it puts certain pressures on kids and on people.
Right.
Instead of it just being, like, you're you because you're you, but, like, let's put you with these people because you'll get along with them the best. Mm. Like, I feel like it puts extra pressure on people. Mm. And I actually feel like that's probably what happened here with Severus Snape. You know, when I think about him, I'm like, okay, so him and Lily, right, were best friends. Mm. And they actually get pulled apart because of the house system. Mm-hmm. Because he falls in with the wrong crowd because he gets sorted into Slytherin.
Yeah.
And it's like, did he get sorted into Slytherin because he also wanted to be in Slytherin? Because that's the same one that his mom was in.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And not you don't always end up in families. Like, we see that, like, with the Patel twins. Like, they end up in two different houses.
Mm.
But still, it's like, for the most part, families kind of end up together. And it's like, I feel like it creates this pride in something that doesn't really have any value and doesn't need to have value.
Right, exactly. You know? Because you're going to go off into life. You're not going to be like this, like, be like, oh, I'm just going to hang out with Slytherin people. You're going to be working with everybody. And I think that's why it's like you're creating a system that actually, you know, creates animosity between these kids. These kids go to school the first time and they're like, I hope I don't get into this house. And it's kind of like,
poor Hufflepuff.
Right. And you hear things like, hey, oh my gosh, all the baddies are from Slytherin.
Yeah. And so then you're putting pressure on kids to be like, to be bad.
Right. You know? And that's terrible.
And I think that Gryffindor and Slytherin are almost the same house.
Mm.
I swear, they're, like, almost the same house.
Yeah, the same house, basically.
It's just, like, a different view, basically, on, like, being pureblood or not, for the most part.
Mm.
So it's, like, I'm sitting there and I'm, like, this is basically the same house and there's animosity between them just because of that.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because people say, like, okay, like, Slytherin, they're the bullies. They're the ones that run around, like, just jinxing anybody. But, like, you think about it, James was going around jinxing people. Whenever, just because he felt like it.
Yeah.
So he was the bully of the school, and he was from Gryffindor.
Yeah.
So it's like, this whole concept of, you know, where it's like, no, like, really, like, you know, the house, it's about the house. No, it's not. I don't think it's about the house, but the people. And honestly, you see the progression. It's like James's story impacts Sirius's story, impacts Harry's story, impacts everyone. And so it's like, it's so important to think, rethink, you know, those things where it's like, okay, what are the big things, the things that are core, even core to our values, that actually cause more separation and hatred between people than bringing them together. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of a hot take sometimes for people to process, yeah, because there's tradition, there's culture,
yeah,
but it's like, hey, like, challenge those if it's not benefiting the community, but it's actually alienating people and driving them to being bad, then let's just get rid of it and we'll find something new to do.
I also argue that I think Harry and Draco could have been friends.
They could have.
If they were in, like, I just think about, like, how many of those, like, kids who have, like, parents who are all, like, oh, pure blood's the right way, like, all of that. Like, how many of them would have been really affected by, like, being friends with someone who's muggle-born?
Mm, right.
I mean, it clearly affected Snape.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I just think if he had the opportunity to be with Lily more and stuff like that, like, would he have... I don't think he would have gone down that path. Mm. I think it would have been a very different path.
Right.
But I think more than anything else, it just bothers me that, like, you... put everybody in these houses based on, like, qualities, per se. But I'm like, how can you even know if you have those qualities at age 11?
Mm. Right.
Like, how could you even know that? Like,
right.
I think that they should just sort into four. I think you need houses because I think you need to have order.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
This is a lot of children all together. And I think a point system makes sense, like earning points for your team and everything. But don't make it based on your values, like,
yeah,
or like,
yeah,
things that are attributed to you, like, just split them up and be like, okay, these people are going here and these people are going there, and like, there's no anything. You're just like, you're in different houses, like, maybe name them after dragons or something, I don't know. But yeah, I agree, I don't think the house systems really make sense. I think it's fun, I think it's cute, I think it's traditional, but I think we're starting to see now in society, like, not necessarily everything that traditional is the best.
I agree.
Just because it's tradition doesn't mean it's the best. And I think it's really hard to balance, like, keeping culture and deciding, like, hey, that cultural thing is actually bad for society.
Yeah.
I think that's a really hard line to cross.
Yeah. I hear that. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I think that, like, even with Snape, it's kind of like, it's like, I genuinely believe if James was nice to Snape, a lot of things would have been avoided. You know, he does save Snape, but, like, to be honest with you, it's after, like, Sirius tried to murder Snape.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like, it's like, you know, they created a sequence of events, and their first conversation was about what? Houses. And it's kind of like the house system has created these wedges between people that maybe should not have ever existed. And so it's like, no, you're creating these kids from the time they're young. You're creating something that's crazy. And I love that the very last chapter of all the books is, you know, Harry talking about how the houses don't really matter.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's really important to see that, where it's like, hey, like, the houses are really actually destroying relationships. Like, you guys need to stop. You need to stop this, you know. And I like that J.K. Rowling doesn't really do anything to the houses in the books. Because I think that's just the reality of the world we live in. People are very unwilling to make the changes that are necessary to bring, you know, long-lasting peace. So, but at the same time, I like that Harry addresses that with his kids.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like, you're talking a little bit earlier about how when we're in Snape's memories, he's talking about, he is talking about, like, the house system a little bit, and he's like, oh, who do you want to be in Gryffindor? And then Snape's like, yeah, if you'd rather be, like, brawny than brainy. Because it's like, clearly Slytherins think that Gryffindors are stupid. And we've had this entire book from the perspective of Gryffindors. It's very Gryffindor centric. Like, we don't really get to hear about the other houses. But, like, those other characters are just as important to Harry's story.
Very true.
Like Luna.
Yeah, very true.
Luna's very important.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah. Talking about Snape's memories a little bit, we kind of brushed over them a little bit, but I think they're really important to this book, and kind of hearing that story of it's interesting because I think Harry made everything about his dad, right? Mm. The whole thing is about his dad. And then it's like we hit the end and it's like actually it was all about his mom. Yeah. Like his mom was the whole reason. And like that was the reason why Dumbledore knew he could trust Snape.
Mm.
And I think that this also comes into like his redemption story a little bit, because the whole reason why he even that Snape and Lily even stopped being friends is because he calls her a mudblood and she's finally like, I don't even know why I'm friends with you. Like, you're friends with Death Eaters. You don't even deny that you don't want to be a Death Eater. Like, you do. Like, you hate me.
Right.
Do you realize that? Like, what you're doing actually, like, hates me. And then in the very end, Phineas Nigellus calls Hermione a mudblood. And Snape's like, never use that word. And I was like, I think that that's part of, like, his remorse. Into his, you know, redemption story. Although I still would argue that Snape is still a petty, awful person. He's still, like, he bullies students all the time. Like, I still think he's a terrible person, but I also think that you can be a bad person and still do, like, good things, things for the greater good.
Snape is a complicated personality.
He's very complicated.
Yeah, I hear that. He's doing something really hard, which is helping Harry, you know, the son of, you know, the woman he loved and the man that he, you know, loathed.
Who tortured
and,
him.
You know, and I think that's kind of like a hard thing to do. And it kind of, a little bit might explain a little bit of his grumpness, you know, but.
He's more than a grump.
Yeah. I mean he's grump. To me, like I feel like it's school. I guess we grew up in different schools, like, because I had grumpy teachers, like, who would just, like, hand out punishments, like, and they enjoyed handing out punishments. They loved it, you know. It's kind of like a grump kind of thing. For me, that's kind of how I interpret Snape, not necessarily an evil person. But I think that, like, he, like, I feel like a lot of it is felt a little bit of an act. A little bit felt like an act of him distancing himself from Harry. Just by virtue of how he talks about Harry to Dumbledore, you know. He still thinks Harry is arrogant, and he's not wrong. Harry has got some arrogant issues, but at the same time, Snape is, he's playing a part, and he doesn't want anyone to know, you know, the connection. So,
yeah.
Okay, so we're going to end it right here.
Yes, we are. Thank you so much for following us through the Harry Potter Wizarding World. It has been so much fun. I really looked forward to doing this podcast, and I think I had a lot of fun. I think Shalom had a lot of fun.
Me too.
So hopefully you did as well.
Yeah.
So again, we are collecting money for the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. So if you head over to our Instagram, you'll be able to click on the link in our bio to help us raise that money.
Yay. Yes, and also we are now going to announce our next series, which we're going to do maybe in a month.
Yeah, probably like a month.
And we're so excited for this one. And so drum roll. We're going to do Lord of the Rings.
And The Hobbit.
My favorite ever.
And The Hobbit.
And The Hobbit. My favorites. This is going to be so much fun.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yes.
So we're going to do that. And yeah, so we will see you in a month then.
In a month. Have a good time, guys. Stay safe. Make sure that you are doing your social distancing.
Yep.
You know, stay clean, and help where you can.
Yeah.
Help where you can. So, thank you so much, guys, for joining us on this nerdy journey.
See you in a month.